The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Web Studio, Primetime Advertising Corporation, and the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder why Christians are always making these stupid predictions. Well, I'll tell you, I am a Christian. And a few months ago on my blog and on my radio show, I made a prediction. Now, as I always admit, my predictions are nothing spectacular. Any thinking person can say the same things, and many have. I suggested that if McCain somehow won the election, Republicans would be charged with voter fraud. It will be said that African Americans were literally turned away from the polls. It will also be taught that those who voted against Obama did so only because of racism. Again, nothing really original here, although most speculate that the accusation will happen only if McCain wins by a small margin. For myself, I am convinced that the charges will be leveled even if McCain wins by a landslide. Anyway, last week, I expanded my prediction over the air. I was guest hosting the Rick Amato Show, KCBQ 1170 San Diego. During the second hour, while talking with a caller, I made a twofold forecast. First, I said that even at this 12th hour, I now believe McCain will actually win. That part of my guesswork was sincere, but it's not something I would bet the farm on. The other part of my prediction, I am sure of if McCain wins. Not only will charges of fraud and racism be spewed forth, violence will accompany the accusations. Well, another charge leveled against Christians, and not just Christians, but conservatives, the broader definition of conservatives who may believe a host of different things about religion, are that conservatives don't seem to have a sense of humor. I got to tell you, there is a movie that premiered like gangbusters just a couple of weeks ago called An American Carol. Very conservative in its message, but extremely irreverent and absolutely hilarious. In fact, it comes from the king of irreverent satirical pieces, acclaimed producer and director, David Zucker. You know his movies, even if you don't know him. His movies include the Kentucky Fried movie way back in 1977. Of course, The Naked Gun in 1988. And then there was The Naked Gun 2.5 and The Naked Gun 33 1/3. He co-directed several films with his brother Jerry, including one that has become the side-splitting, definitive, classic satirical piece of all time, Airplane, in the year 1980. Let's bring him on right now. David Zucker, welcome to our program.
Hi, Bob. It's great to be here.
Yeah,
people are surprised to find that I, of all people, have become a Republican.
Well, no, I said conservative, and I'm not presuming that you are a Republican.
I am.
Oh, you actually did.
I had no other choice. I mean, I was in love with my old Democratic Party, and I couldn't take it anymore, so I had to leave.
Well, sir, first of all, it's an honor to meet you. I've been a big fan of your movies for years, and I'm not saying that just because you're a guest on my program. I have a copy of Airplane that I bought on sale at Target just a couple of weeks ago, and I can't wait to. Now, did you direct the sequel to Airplane also, Airplane 2?
No, we didn't think. My brother and I and Jim Abrams, our partner, didn't feel that there were enough jokes left to make another Airplane movie. And we begged Paramount not to do it, but they went ahead and did it and proved us right. So, everybody says, "Oh yeah, you directed the Airplane movie." So,
Well, I think I'm with you on sequels. Now, was I mistaken about Naked Gun 33 1/3? Did you?
No. Well, some movies are okay for sequels, like the Naked Gun series are great.
So you did do all. I mentioned that you did.
I have nothing against sequels per se. It's just for some certain movies are one-offs.
My feeling about sequels is if the story legitimately goes on, or if it was designed as a series from the beginning, a la James Bond, a la Indiana Jones. But when a story's over and box office is the only reason they make it, I guess I would call that an illegitimate sequel.
Right. I mean, there's any number of detective adventures, police adventures that Leslie Nielsen could get involved in. And they keep making more horror movies. So, you know, they can keep doing those.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to ever do another one.
Well, yeah, and a lot of people don't even remember that there were about five or six airport movies that Airplane was a brilliant satire of. Absolutely hilarious. Now, regarding what you said about finding it strange that you're Republican, I want you to know that I'm a kindred spirit there, too. I'm still what would be called a conservative Democrat.
Right.
I've never left the Democratic Party, but I have voted Republican for the last 20 years. And I do think that the party of Franklin Roosevelt and John F. Kennedy has been hijacked by the far, far left. And
right. Exactly what I thought. I mean, I've just been existing on fumes I even voted for Gore. I stayed so late because I'm a crazy big, you know, environmentalist. And, you know, we drive a fleet of Priuses and I have solar panels all across the roof of my house. You know, I love, you know, trees and stuff, but, you know, at a certain point, you have to say, you know, there's certain issues that are more important, and it was mainly our national security issues that I just didn't think the Democrats had a handle on at all.
I think you're absolutely right. Now, Hollywood, of course, is not known for being very conservative, and yet on your latest movie, you have assembled a cast of really popular award-winning actors. Some of them we knew were conservative. Others, if they are, they're just coming out of the closet. I mean, Dennis Hopper, John Voight, Kelsey Grammer, James Wood, Kevin Farley. I mean, this
Those
is a pretty incredible thing.
I mean, Bob, I used all eight conservatives in Hollywood. but you know,
I guess you
also
forgot Chuck Norris. So.
Yeah, there weren't quite enough parts to spread it that thin. But Leslie Nielsen is no conservative, and neither is David Alan Grier. But I knew both of those actors quite well, and had worked together with them in the past.
Well, I don't think
Grier kept saying, "Zucker, you're a Republican." I couldn't believe it, but we're not that serious about it, and no one takes me all that seriously. So we everybody's friends, and my brother's still a Democrat, and we still get along fine. So.
Now, I don't mean to proclaim my ignorance, but I'm assuming Paris Hilton is no conservative either.
No, she's no conservative, but she's a big fan of the Naked Guns, and had always wanted to date me. So.
You know, I've got to say, I mean, I appreciate the conservatives that came out of the closet, but hats off to Paris Hilton and Leslie Nielsen for not being conservative and having the guts to be in the movie anyway. I think that says a lot to their credit.
Or it may be that they didn't really understand the gravity of the situation. I think they read the script. I mean, they thought it was funny. It just, we really just wanted to find the humor in the excesses of the far left, and that's what I'm always trying to do. I wasn't trying to, sway the election or change the social history of America, but, that's just, I'm always trying to find new sources of humor. And
I have seen the movie three times, and the first time I saw it, I couldn't tell if I was spellbound and impressed because I was just in shock and denial that I was seeing so many actors make a conservative movie, or if it was the brilliance of the story itself. And honestly, it was both. It had the same kind of irreverent humor as Airplane, but if I may say, it had some heart and a kind of a legitimate story. And it was still in the category of satire, but certainly some characters you cared about and a little more heart than Airplane.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I went into unexpected places that I hadn't even intended. I mean, one of the writers that I was working on the script with from the beginning had insisted on this scene with George Washington taking the character of Michael Malone, who's basically Michael Moore, on a tour of St. Paul's Chapel in New York City, which is right next to the World Trade Center. And the door is open, as you remember from the movie, and you see the ruins of the World Trade Center. And in a comedy, it's like gulp. It's hard to get an audience back usually after something like that, and after a 3-minute scene where there are no jokes. But My other co-writer, Lewis Friedman, really cleverly constructed a running gag throughout the movie that pays off at the end of it. That's just, I mean, after the horror of the ruins of the World Trade Center, the audience does laugh at the gag said by George Washington. I won't give it away, but it's really one of the things I'm proud of in the movie, that we were able to go and the movie has that weight to it, and we get away with it.
Well, now let's just run through the story briefly for those who haven't heard it. This is kind of a rendition of the Christmas Carol, only this time Michael Malone, alias Michael Moore, wants to end the 4th of July. He's visited by three spirits, but they're spirits such as George Patton and John Kennedy and George Washington. Really clever idea. What moved you to decide to make this movie? I know it really is as hilarious as your other movies, but kind of a working against Hollywood's agenda?
It was really 9/11 that really it just woke me up, said, hey, they're trying to kill us. This is serious. We're in a war. And then I saw the disconnect between, you know, that half of the country that realized that this was the most important thing facing us. It still is. I mean, despite the economic woes or environmental traumas that we go through, but this is the most frightening thing to me. And so that's really what motivated me to make the movie.
What kind of reaction have you gotten from fellow actors, fellow directors?
Oh, well, you know, I think, you know, other people in Hollywood, they kind of are amused by me and tolerate me, and no one's been angry, really.
So you've been grandfather clause a little bit because of your previous work?
Grandfather clause. He did Airplane, and so he's lost his way, and, you know, he's steered off the track a little bit, but, you know, I think they give me a pass, and they still know my brother's still, he still has his, you know, liberal.
Oh, so it's like, well, his brother may be able to temper him. So
that's
we'll,
right.
We'll
I think, yeah. Somebody, you know, and then, you know, basically the reviewers, you know, the conservative reviewers have loved it, and the liberal, you know, mainstream media reviewers they're just angry with it. They hate it. It's unbelievable that these people see the same movie. And it's much like Gibson's Passion of the Christ. I think, you know, Jews and Christians seem to see the, you know, two different movies.
Except for me, since I'm a Jew who converted to Christianity, I think I was able to kind of
bring
a little bit of objectivity to it.
Yeah, but I realize that, you know, Christians are only, you know, our best friends in the world, I think, as Jews. And that was, I had no problem with Passion of the Christ, but I think that the, you know, the mainstream press and the, you know, the studios wouldn't touch it. It's like, it's weird. There is a 50-50 divide in America, and people see different movies, and I think it's much the same thing could be said about American Carol, whereas it's hilariously funny and great and moving to people. People were emotionally affected by the movie.
They were, and you know, there was horrible anti-Semitism in the Middle Ages, but now it's coming from the radical Muslim extremists who you portray accurately in your movie. Hollywood doesn't seem to be concerned about them, and yet the Christians, the ones who are sticking up for Judaism, are the ones that get accused of anti-Semitism.
Thank God we have billions of Christians.
Yeah, you talk about a disconnect. Okay, stay with me over the break, if you would. My very special guest, David Zucker, director of An American Carol, and some of you know him even better as the director of Airplane. We'll be right back. So, you think you can run your new business without a website? Hello, McFly. How are they going to discover your business? The phone book? Do people even use that thing anymore? Or maybe you just leave your business card in restaurants next to the generous tip, but you won't be able to afford that generosity much longer if you don't start using the internet. I do understand. If you're anything like me, you entered the computer age kicking and screaming. After all, I'm the artist type. That's a fancy way of saying that the only time I fix a computer myself is by rebooting or remembering to plug it in. But I'll tell you, even though I'm more into the arts than the sciences, I use my computer constantly, all day long, in fact, and I couldn't even imagine getting by without my website. Let me tell you how to build a website of your own simply and easily without the cost and trouble of a designer. The name is Web Studio. I don't see you writing this down. Web Studio. Web Studio is a website design software. It enables you to create your own pages in minutes without knowing HTML. All you do is use your mouse to drag and drop images and text. Then it saves the pages for you on the internet. Sounds simple? The program includes 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and anything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com. And don't worry, you can still use that sharp-looking business card. Just print your website on it. And welcome. Welcome to the 21st century. Did you know we've been to the moon?
Hey, this is Lori K. Lewis, a frequent co-host on The Bob Siegel Show, Talk Radio 1170 on KCBQ. If you have questions or comments during this radio broadcast, please call Bob at this toll-free number, 1-888-344-1170. Again, the number is 1-888-344-1170. We'd like to hear what you have to say.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm here with David Zucker, the director of the film Airplane, many other films, but most recently, An American Carol. Now, Mr. Zucker, you told me that Hollywood, they love you. They've known you for years. Your brother's at least liberal, so your family's still cool like the Baldwins. But let me ask you a more difficult question. Any kind of flack given to some of the actors who came out of the closet for this?
Most of them were already somewhat known. I think Topper was probably a surprise.
Kelsey Grammer was a bit of a surprise to me, too.
And then recently I read that he's supporting Obama. So,
Kelsey Grammer is supporting Obama now?
No, Hopper.
Oh, Hopper is supporting Obama. Okay.
Yeah, no, Kelsey, I think he comes from a conservative family that goes back.
Well, I won't get started on Obama because there won't be enough hours in the day.
Yeah,
how's the film doing at the box office?
The movie, well, we opened, the third highest movie of all new releases, so
that was encouraging.
And but the downside was it was the most crowded weekend in the last 2 years. So it's been difficult for any political movies because a lot of things have just been drowned out by the economic news.
But it is still in the theaters, I take it?
Yes, we still have a few hundred theaters left.
Okay, people, I'm telling you, you've got to go out and see this movie. Mr. Zucker, what do you think your next movie will be?
Well, I'm doing a PG-rated family comedy. I want to do slapstick, Laurel and Hardy, just, to really make kids laugh. I think I take my kids to movies now, and it's more the parents laugh more than the kids do. They're kind of like too smart and too hip for the room. Some of these writers are writing for the parents.
I found myself that way with the Bugs Bunny cartoons. When I was a little kid, I followed the story. I didn't think they were that funny. And yet I watch Wile E. Coyote and Foghorn Leghorn and Marvin the Martian, and I've never laughed so hard in my life.
Yeah, or the Three Stooges.
Oh, my goodness.
And they were old then when we saw them.
And there were really six Stooges, just like the six Charlie's Angels, Kismet.
That's right. And Laurel and Hardy were funny. I mean, not too much of that stuff now.
Well, it is such an honor having you on our show, and I hope you'll be a reoccurring guest. But before I let you go, let me just ask you, I heard a couple people talking on, I think it was on CNN yesterday, and they were talking about Hollywood. And one of the pundits said that even though you see very few actors come out, there's many people behind the scenes in Hollywood, that there are far more Republicans and conservatives than we realize, but they're a little shy about speaking up. Would you agree with that? Has that been your observation?
That's absolutely true. I mean, when you're outnumbered, it's 9-1. I mean, and 10% identifying as conservative or libertarian or Republican, and then only 5% will admit it. So it's because the conversation in the studio meetings, the boardrooms, the agencies is all Bush is an idiot. I mean, they say it out loud as if they assume everybody agrees with them. So a lot of us kind of like bite our tongues and just kind of listen, and you're not used to speaking up because it's, there's 10 people for every one that will, disagree with it.
Well, I'm sure they said that about Abraham Lincoln, too. Even people on his own cabinet thought he was some country bumpkin. They could all do a better job running the country. I wonder if the future, if our civilization survives, we'll look back and paint Bush in a much better light than he's painted now.
I think there's no question about it. I mean, just like Truman, you know, really, you know, left office under a cloud, and just people were sick of the Korean War, and his approval ratings were very low. Also, of course, they weren't higher than Congress like they are now. I mean, Congress is even lower. But you know, I think Bush will, you know, look. I mean, it's hard to prove a negative, and there haven't been any terror attacks for you know, since he's been in office. I mean, since 9/11.
But boy, if we had had one, they sure would have blamed him, wouldn't they?
Right. Yeah. But
he doesn't get credit when we don't have one.
And the next guy is going to have a tough job, no matter what.
Well, David Zucker, director of An American Carol and Airplane, you are a courageous man, sir, and I know I've already said it three times. I'd like to say it again. I am honored. You're a brave person.
Or just foolish. You have to put that into the mix.
You know, we could use a fool or two when we're going through the times we are having. People, I'm telling you, the movie is hilarious. I know some of my Christian friends, you know, it's a little bit irreverent. You may not want to make a church outing out of it, but if you can handle irreverent humor, I just found it absolutely hilarious. David Zucker, thank you for being on our program.
Okay, thanks for having me, Bob.
Okay, take care. And we will be right back with two other very important guests. We're going to switch gears a little bit, but no less important of a subject. I'm going to have Pastor Jim Garlow of Skyline Church in La Mesa and Dean Boyles, who works with Western Center for Law and Policy here in San Diego. These are two men that have been fighting courageously themselves. Their battle, Proposition 8, the marriage amendment. We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated, license number 480539, W&S Electric. This is Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show four nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. That's the Rick Amato Show, Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Dean Boyles works with the Western Center for Law and Policy, a nonprofit legal defense organization dedicated to the protection and promotion of religious freedom, parental rights, and other civil liberties. The WCLP engages in constitutional litigation in state and federal courts and is also active in the areas of public policy and education. I've already had the privilege of meeting Dean about a month ago when I was guest hosting for Rick Amato. Dean Boyles, welcome to the Bob Siegel Show.
Great to be on your show, Bob.
Well, it's a pleasure having you again, sir. Now, Proposition 8, if anybody out there has been asleep or dead this last couple of months, this is the marriage amendment. And why don't you just run us through it again? Why did we need an amendment about marriage? Give us the brief history.
Well, back in the year 2000, the wise citizens of California saw fit to define marriage as between one man and one woman. And that was an amendment. It was called Prop 22. It wasn't a constitutional amendment, but it was a state statute that was, I believe it was sponsored by Pete Knight. And the idea was to protect marriage, to define it as it has been defined for 5,000 years throughout recorded history, successfully in all societies. And So the people of California voted 61% in strong support of one-man, one-woman marriage. Well, unfortunately, in May of this year, after a lot of legal wrangling that worked its way up to our state Supreme Court, four unelected justices of our state Supreme Court created a new right, and they put it in the guise of the Equal Protection Clause in our state constitution, and declared a fundamental right to marry a person of your choosing, i.e. same-sex marriage in this case. And so much like Roe v. Wade in 1973, the court foisted upon the people what really should have been the policy decision of the people, which was already decided 8 years ago. And the court, by creating a constitutional right, tried to take it away, the issue away from the people. And they did so in May. And fortunately, efforts were already underway to qualify a constitutional amendment, which now has become Proposition H for the November ballot, which will allow the people to regain control of the definition of marriage. And fortunately, even the court recognizes, Chief Justice George has recognized that he was one of the four, unfortunately, who voted in favor of this new right. He realizes that once the people speak, the court will not be able to get around the will of the people, because obviously the Supreme Court even is under the power and influence and authority of the state constitution.
Well, I'm awfully glad to hear that, because I got to tell you, and there's a cynical side to my nature that thought that even if this amendment passed, some court would say it was an unconstitutional amendment, even though we would think that would be impossible. But standing logic on its ears has been the history of judicial activism. For any of you out there who think that courts have a right to legislate from the bench rather than just enforce the law, and you think our courts are some kind of sacred cow, I have just three words for you: Dred Scott decision.
That's right.
Well, let's bring on, I know, a co-worker of yours who's helped you, and he's been kind of the spiritual side of this, the spearheader of this. Jim Garlow is the pastor of a very large and successful church, Skyline Church in La Mesa. He's also a church historian and author of the books Cracking the Da Vinci Code and The Secret Revealed, just to name two of them. But his greatest claim to fame is that he has a member in his church called me, Bob Siegel. I am a member, and I need to say this, and I've said this to Jim personally, but I want to say it for everybody in San Diego to hear. I have been a pastor myself. I have been to other churches and have had pastors. And now Jim Garlow is my pastor, and when I look at the work he has done on Proposition 8, the flack he's taken, the name-calling he's gotten, I'm of the opinion he's actually put his life in danger. Never in my life have I been more proud to call somebody my pastor. Jim Garlow, welcome to our program. Do we have Jim Garlow on the line, guys?
Boy. Yes, I'm right here, Bob. I'd like to be on with you.
After all that, and we don't even have him there. Okay, good. Welcome to our show. How would you say Proposition 8 and the whole effort is going? Where are we at this point? What kind of battles have we won? What kind of battles are ahead?
Well, we have been very encouraged to see the Proposition 8 come from behind early October, 5 points behind to a 10-point spread to 5 points ahead in just an 11-day span. That was released October the 6th. Now, it's still tight. It's still close. One polling shows us 8 points down. Another one shows us 9 points up. Realistically, we have come from a behind position up to a tie or slightly better than a tie. We need everybody with any moral decency to be voting and voting yes on 8. This is amazing because historically, referendums like this, amendments like this, if they start in a negative posture, they slide more to the negative. As people become just not really well informed on them, 2-1, they tend to, when they're not informed, they tend to vote against them. So for us to buck that trend on Prop 8 is a bit unprecedented. This is quite a journey that we've been through. I'm encouraged with thousands of pastors standing up and just incredible numbers of people around the state. We've had up to as many as 3,000 people at a time on conference calls with pastors across the state. Attorneys like Dean Broyles have made their lives count for us and worked vigorously alongside many hours. So, and we had a satellite simulcast. We've had three of those across the state. They were downlinked to 170 different church auditoriums as people gathered all over the state. We've had hundreds of churches on phone banks, phoning their entire constituency. The database of a church is roughly 4 to 5 times the attendance calling there. And in addition to that, around 40,000 people knocking on doors, have knocked on the doors of 75 to 80% of registered voters to help inform them what is happening. And across this state, tens of thousands of people have been in a 40-day fast. We're day 33 of a 40-day fast as we pray with tens of thousands that are going to gather next Saturday in Qualcomm Stadium for a great prayer event from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m.
A 12-hour event.
I'm sorry?
A 12-hour event.
12-hour event from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. They can go to thecall.com and they can learn all about it. Just come to the stadium. This is Catholics. This is evangelicals. This is people of a lot of theological stripes all coming together, people of moral decency who care about truth and justice in our land and therefore joining together on this.
It's a chance to be a part of history, people, and I encourage everybody to go. Pastor Garlow, you know the accusations. Christians are being accused of hate speech. We're being intolerant. How do you, as a pastor, respond to those
it's
kinds
interesting.
Of accusations?
Whether people have hobbies like golf, from the time I was 9, my hobby has been politics. So I've been fascinated from age 9 with political discourse and various issues. If I could, I'd go to Republican, Democrat, and Independent Party meetings. I'd go to them all because I really enjoy them. However, I have never in my life seen such absence of civil discourse. We are hardly able to bring this up and talk with it intelligently in many settings because immediately the crowd that's supposed to be so tolerant suddenly becomes hateful. And they accuse us of being hateful. We're quite happy to dialogue with the cardinal issues. But instead, what happens in those moments is visceral reactions of intolerance and hatred like I have never personally seen. Signs have been, the Yes on 8 signs have been stolen by the tens of thousands across the state. They have been defaced with many of them spray painted. There's a man in Modesto who was handing out the signs in his Catholic church parking lot, was attacked, brutally attacked. He had injuries around his eye, had to go and have surgery in a hospital. There has been a family in Santa Cruz, for example, had a sign stolen. They simply put a sign up on front of their house. So the neighbors parked their white Suburban in front with a sign on it saying, "Bigots live here." If you stand for marriage being one man, one woman, they attempt to intimidate and bully. And we're not about to take that. We're not about to back off by virtue of this, which is intriguingly, because of their bullying and intimidation, they're puzzled by this. But in 26 states that have been studied, see, 28 states have voted on it, 27 states have passed a constitutional amendment that marries one man, one woman. In the 26 states that have been analyzed, there's a gap on average of 7% between the polling and the actual voting. And the reason they say, in their blogs, they say, well, it's because people lie. Well, the reason they have to lie is because they're afraid. They're afraid by this. So consequently, people will vote more conservatively. They'll vote for biblical, traditional, natural marriage in the voting booth, but they're afraid to speak about it outside.
God in heaven, please let that same gap be in the polling on the general presidential election as well.
Yes.
Okay, both of you, my guests, Dean Boyles and Jim Garlow, stay with me over the break. We are talking about Proposition 8. This is a time to be a part of history, folks. It's a time to show some courage. You know that the first time you heard about two men making out, it seemed a little odd to you. And it doesn't mean you can't love people. It doesn't mean you can't show compassion. But let's be honest. The king isn't wearing any clothes. It's a little bit odd. Who are we kidding? Let's have some courage. Let's speak up. Let's not let four judges decide the future of our state. We'll be right back.
How many times have you heard the phrase, "they're all the same," applied to local contractors? It is unfortunate that a few can tarnish the reputations of many, but it sure is nice when you find a contractor with godly principles. But what if they only do floors or only the painting? What if you want to build a whole new home? Or you want someone to fully complete your remodel or tenant improvements? You need ProBuilt. Serving San Diego since 1987, residential and commercial, quality work completed on time. Local Christian businessman and president of ProBuilt, Bill, Jim Bell, said, "When people pay you to do a job, they simply want you to do the job. They expect quality work, and they expect it to be done on time. We do that at ProBuild." For references and dozens of pictures of both residential and commercial work, visit our website, ProBuildInc.com. That's ProBuildInc.com. Or call our El Cajon office at 619-593-2965. We're fully bonded and insured. California State License Number 567925. ProBuild.
I'd like to remind all of my listeners that the Bob Siegel Show has a sister program on our sister station, KPRZ 1210 on the dial. Every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30, you can hear City Voice. On this provocative program, my good friend George Runyon interviews a different local Christian ministry every week. You can listen to the show while driving to church, and don't be surprised, you may find it so interesting that you'll stay in the parking lot continuing to listen and skipping those Sunday school donuts. That's City Voice with George Runyon, every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30 on our sister station, KPRZ 1210. But right now, you're listening to KCBQ 1170. Back to the Bob Siegel Show. My guests, Jim Garlow of Skyline Church, David Boyles, who works with the Western Center for Law and Policy. Thank you, gentlemen, for being on our program. I'm honored to have both of you. Dean Boyles, let's bring you back into the conversation. What kind of reaction have you been getting in terms of people accusing your efforts of hate speech, intolerance, etc.?
Well, I can just echo the knowledge of the things that Jim Garlow mentioned a moment ago, which is, you know, signs being stolen all over the state. And I heard a story about a gal in Chino Hills who had a very nice car in a nice neighborhood, keyed up and defaced and virtually destroyed by anti-Prop 8 activists. So it's getting kind of dicey and somewhat violent out there. But personally, we've received a few kind of not too hateful emails and a few things in the mail, but it hasn't been that bad for us. I will mention, though, that I was in a debate last Thursday night before last in Thousand Oaks with the Federalist Society, hosted by the Federalist Society, with a Lambda Legal Defense Fund attorney and also against an ACLU attorney, Harvard-educated ACLU attorney. And I will note, as far as public discourse, it was very civil, generally very friendly, although I got a few angry comments and evil stares or negative stares from the Lambda attorney. But it was pretty good discourse overall, and I will note that their arguments are fairly weak and fairly broad, and they appeal to emotions a lot, and we had the facts on our side, we had the law in our side, and I will, from the people we talked to afterwards, it was a very good victory for our side. Fortunately, it was not videotaped, so it can't be re-televised or put on YouTube, but it was a very interesting debate, and it went very well, and I can honestly say in the marketplace of ideas, truth wins. We don't need to be afraid, and we just need to stand firm and get out there and speak the truth.
Absolutely. And it just seems that they really don't want to debate at all. It seems that their purpose is to shut the other side up.
Well, yeah, in our case, not only shut the other side up, but actually lie and ignore the truth. For example, in that debate, it was repeated three times by the ACLU attorney in spite of overwhelming evidence that we provided, that was also provided subsequently by the moderator and the audience who was asking questions. The ACLU your attorney repeated three times that there is no threat to religious liberty or free speech from the homosexual
that is absolute
agenda,
malarkey,
including the anti-Prop 8 forces. And it was pretty amazing. She just simply ignored that fact. And we kind of called her on it, but she maintained that position throughout. The other thing that they want to lie about and ignore is the effect that it'll have on children. You saw probably the recent advertisement that came out by Jack O'Connell saying that there's no discussion of marriage in the public schools. It's not mandated in California. Well, I beg to differ. I mean, there's actually an education code on point that mandates that children in our state be taught about marriage and family. And, you know, we brought that up with them, and yet they keep on arguing, well, there's no requirement. They're not taught that. And yet we see, what, in the last few weeks, a young class of children in public schools being brought to a lesbian wedding for a field trip in San Francisco. So
yeah. The
obfuscations, the confusion, the lies that are being disseminated by our opposition are pretty astounding. And yet, as John Adams said, facts are stubborn things.
Yeah, we confuse people with the facts. How do they say this with a straight face? They lie that it won't be taught to children, but A, they already brought some children to a gay wedding for a field trip. And a lot of people don't know. They've been reading books like Heather has to mommies for the last decade. Let's bring Jim Garlow back into the conversation. And gentlemen, I want to throw out a statement for either of you to respond. And I'll just say this personally. I am against gay marriage. However, having said that, if I really thought the militant gay activists would say, okay, we have the right to get married, now we're square, we're finished, we have every right we need, and if I thought they would stop there and not go on and try to pass quote-unquote hate speech legislation and not go on and try to tell pastors who they can marry and who they can't marry, I would be fine with that. But isn't this really a small part of a much bigger agenda? That's for either of you to respond to.
This was the same group that was saying back in 92 when they accelerated their journey for domestic unions and civil unions, domestic partnership, but we'll never ask for the term marriage. It's in their agenda to continue to press it. Gavin Newsom himself admits if Prop 8 does not pass, and you can Google this quote, it's fascinating. He says this will set us back 10 years in the other agenda items we have. When they say they don't teach it in public school, on Jack O'Connell's own website for the state, he, of course, is the state superintendent of schools, admits there that 96% of schools are required to teach sex education, marriage, and family issues. He's lying right on his own website in terms of when he says that they don't teach it. And also, in addition, the California Teachers Association, as you may have already noted on the show earlier, I'm not sure if you did, but they gave $1 million to No on 8 to try to trounce traditional marriage. The California Association of Teachers of English, in their own brochure for their 50th annual convention, which will be held February the 20th, beginning in 2009 in Santa Clara, it has 7 program strands, and on page 5 it lists how to educate teachers to include lesbian, gay, transgender, bisexual themes into the traditional curriculum. That's their words. If people want to actually see the brochure, they removed it from their website after we announced it last Sunday. So you can go to protectmarriagecA.com and click on resources and then go to California Association of Teachers of English. You can see their actual program on page 5 where they're training the teachers how to teach this in the classroom while they're saying to us at the same time, we're not going to teach this.
That's very crucial information, and there's something else you should all know. There's a book that you can still find on Amazon, but find it before they take it off. It's called After the Ball. It's really the Gay Militant Manifesto. It was written in the 80s about how the 90s would be used to change America's mind through brainwashing and basically to make it against the law to even say homosexuality was wrong, all in the name of tolerance. My special guests, Dean Boyles and Jim Garlow, talking about Prop 8. We'll be right back. Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com. This is Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show 4 nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues, local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. If you don't think you need such news talk and commentary, just try this quick pop quiz. Does Kevin Billings serve in the California State Senate or the United States Senate? Time's up! You were wrong no matter how you answered, because there is no Kevin Billings, and you might have known that if you'd been listening to the Rick Amato Show. I'm telling you, folks, this is the best talk show in San Diego. Oh, wait, I forgot about my own program. I'm telling you, folks, this is one of the two best talk shows in San Diego and the only live local evening talk show in San Diego. That's the Rick Amato Show, Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. My guests are Jim Garlow of Skyline Church, David Boyles with the Western Center for Law and Policy, talking about Proposition 8, the Marriage Amendment. Do want to tell you about another special event, related event, this Sunday, November 2nd, and this is at Skyline Church. It's the same Skyline Church that Jim Garlow pastors, but it's at the 11 o'clock Sunday school hour, an event that I'm going to be involved in, room 412. I will be doing a one-man drama entitled Closets, Kings, and Other Points of View, and it's about this very subject. It's a dramatic reading where I portray every character myself using a different voice. The story is something I wrote in 1996, but as you can tell, it's becoming quite prophetic. A woman is asked to discontinue her Sunday school class due to her lesbian lifestyle. In response, in the story, she defies the idea of separation between church and state, files a lawsuit against the church. So with the courtroom as a platform, homosexuality is debated. And actually, both sides are well represented, because I'm of the belief that if people hear both sides, the side that's the truth will prevail. Questions at hand: why does the Bible call homosexuality a sin? Is homosexuality caused by genetic or psychological influences? What kinds of political factors led to the declassification of homosexuality as a mental disorder back in the year 1973? I guarantee you hardly anybody knows that one. Do people really view homosexuality as normal, or are they feeling pressured to do so? This play challenges people to sit down and honestly discuss the volatile issue in a civil manner without all the name-calling and stereotyping. Now, I know that many of my listeners are already attending other churches on Sunday morning. You have great commitments on Sunday morning. Here is my offer to you. If you want to play hooky just one week from your own church and come to Skyline next week, I will personally write a note for you to give your pastor the following Sunday, and then he'll excuse you because he won't want to feel like a Pharisee. Let's bring our guests back on, and my next question goes to Jim Garlow. A lot of people, Pastor Garlow, are saying that the scripture doesn't even condemn homosexuality. What do you say to that?
Well, I'm chuckling at your invitation to write notes to pastors. That is absolutely awesome. I've never heard of that.
It's a new idea. It's something we ought to kick around.
That's great. And if I can put in a quick commercial at 11:30 tomorrow, Monday, 11:30 a.m. tomorrow, the media bus tour on Proposition 8. It started all the way in the northern part of the states, wandered across the state for the last 10 days. It culminates at Skyline Church with people coming from all over San Diego, 11:30 a.m. tomorrow, Monday morning. Be there. There's going to be speakers and all kinds of things happening in front of Skyline Church as we gather as a great crowd to celebrate that. And now back to your great question. Sorry, I got distracted there just a
bit. Okay.
It just fascinates me that people would say such a thing. And they'll say, well, the Bible didn't speak about this, or they'll even say the Bible affirms homosexuality, when in point of fact, the whole Bible starts with a marriage. It ends with a wedding. It's a male and a female in the beginning. It's a bride and groom at the end. And the only time Jesus discussed marriage, he specifically spoke of the issue, borrowing from Genesis, that a male and a female, he says, for this reason, a man and a woman cleave to each other and become one flesh. And then there's a number of scriptures where specifically the practice or the action of homosexuality is clearly, crystal clear, condemned. It's only been in the last 40 years, after 2,000 years of Christian history, and then the 3,000 years of Judaism before that, suddenly there's been an epiphany of a group of theologians, gay theologians, that reinvented text in the Bible, revised them, and suddenly drained them of their content and came up with this whole new gay theology that the Bible doesn't speak about.
Now, here's a question that doesn't get asked that frequently. Even if we didn't have the Bible, even if somebody was not a Christian, do we really even need the scripture to just look at nature and say that men were meant for women? This question is to either one of you.
Well, I would like to address that, because that was part of my opening statement in my debate a couple of weeks ago. And because I wasn't speaking primarily to a Christian or Judeo-Christian audience, I mentioned theology briefly, but my main argument was based on what I call the common good or the general welfare, that you can look at biological studies, sociological studies, psychological studies, studies of families and studies of children, and also on the other side, look at the results of the homosexual lifestyle, the negative results, including AIDS and promiscuity and children raised in those families. You can look at all that data and that information purely on a sociological or cultural level and say clearly that purely from a public policy standpoint, homosexuality or homosexual marriage is not in the general good or general welfare, whereas traditional marriage clearly is in the common good or serves the general welfare. And I made the statement in the beginning of my opening statement that whereas traditional marriage serves the broader interests of society or the common good, I believe that the only a reasonable argument can only be made that same-sex marriage serves only the selfish desires of the individuals who desire in the same-sex marriage who desire to enter into that marriage. In other words, it serves only narrow or selfish or individual goals versus the general or common good of society. So I think that that argument can be made. And interestingly enough, that no one through the rest of the 2 hours of the debate tried to attack that idea or concept. The only response to that, we now have this new right that the court declared, and we, you know, the vague concept of equality for all. And yet they did not attack the idea that the common good is better served by traditional marriage. And that's part of the reason, Rick, that I would disagree with the statement you made earlier, which is, why not just give marriage as long as they don't attack our other rights, such as free speech or religious liberty? Because marriage means something. And so I think we should ask the question, whether you're a believer or not, or follow the Judeo-Christian viewpoint, the question we need to ask is, why should we redefine marriage, and what will the unintended consequences of redefining marriage be? And I believe that we shouldn't enter into social experiments lightly. And besides the obvious ones that we recognize, which is effects on children and impacts on free speech and religious liberties that will occur through the redefinition of marriage and other homosexual agenda-type laws, I think we need to look at its impact that it's already had in other places like Sweden and Massachusetts and elsewhere.
Well, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And my point earlier was that I don't agree with gay marriage for all the reasons you mentioned. I'm just saying that's the least of what they're trying to do. They want to go from there and just actually make it against the law to even speak against homosexuality. And people don't realize that there's an even bigger agenda at play.
It's interesting to me that Rosie O'Donnell, on her TV show, when she was going to tell her child why their family had two mommies, she said, because mommy wants two mommies. Mm. It wasn't about the child. The institution of marriage is fundamentally sacrificial to produce the child and produce the atmosphere of the mommy and daddy for the child, whereas the gay agenda serving 3% of the adult population, it's all about gay rights, their rights, and children's rights are just trashed.
Yeah, and you know, if we switch the subject, if we weren't talking about homosexual and we just asked somebody, would a child be better off in a single-parent family or having both a father and mother, everybody would say yes. But the minute you tell them homosexuality is involved, then it's like, unless you have two loving men. I think that's where their Freudian slips reveal what they really believe.
It's amazing that social engineering would be followed by people who otherwise are smart on other issues, where they would intentionally design marriages where every marriage would either lack a father or would lack a mother. No thinking person would do that to children.
Jim Garlow and Dean Boyles, two very brave men. Please, everybody in San Diego, be praying for these brave men. Pray for me, too. Next week, I'm coming on to do one more last-ditch effort right before the election. It's going to be called my show. If you think gay marriage will not affect you, think again. We'll see you then.
Thank you for listening to The Bob Siegel Show. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. The Bob Siegel Show was brought to you in part by the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton, helping infertile families have children. Tom Pinkerton would like to invite you to help Bob expand his radio program by donations or sponsorship. For more information about Bob's ministry, go to www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you can read Bob's articles and get information about Bob's books. That's Bob Siegel, SIEGEL.net.